Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, well, before we get into our Torah portion reading and our teaching, Sally and Derek, will you guys share your week with Remy?
Do you want me to stand?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, Remy is definitely heavy. I guess the thing that sorry, it's super weighty because it's literally connected with everything that was just released, so I'm trying to like put it into words. But basically what was revealed when we were carrying Remy was our frailty whenever we disobey Yahweh, basically. I was already starting to get sick whenever I started carrying Remy, and then obviously I went through the cycle of sickness while having him, and so don't worry, it broke on Wednesday, so I'm not contagious. But in that, like, basically Yahweh took me through a process of tangibly showing me, like, what my condition is like when I choose to disobey versus what he's trying to pull us out of. I mean, we know that we have mirrors right in front of our faces at all times, right? But this was like a mirror to my being. Like, literally, I got to see the state of my being in corruption, basically, when I choose to disobey. Like the first time that I was supposed to take Remy out in public to the store, like that was like, I mean, he's walking me out of this, but this is just real life. Like I chose to keep him in the truck to the point where Zeke was like, Mom, I'll carry Remy. And I was like, no, we're going in for two bags of chips. I'm not going to carry him in when we do that. And so, like, he had to watch my disobedience. And, like, he didn't understand it. And so I had to see what my choice of disobedience does to the next, because they literally, like, we can stand in a place where we're doing all we're doing, right, for the majority of the time to ensure that to them it's natural to obey, it's natural to hear his voice and follow his instructions. And then when you have a moment where you choose to disobey and they look at you like they literally can't comprehend disobedience, like that is what we are like living for. And at the same time, it obviously breaks you as a parent to watch what your disobedience does to your children or to the next generation. And so that was something very apparent. And so obviously that was the only time I deliberately disobeyed the whole week, but still to be able to walk through that process with the next and say, okay, Mommy, like, deliberately disobeyed. Like, I failed. And this is like something Yahweh is walking me out of. So we're going to carry him, you know, for the rest of the stores, and we're going to make that public. And so, yes, I got to reconcile and show him what that looks like. But at the same time, like, it gave me a hunger to, like, one day that will not be my story. Like, one day I won't have to learn after choosing disobedience. And so, anyways, like, in the connection with, like, me being sick, that was, like, Yahweh showing me, like we are so frail without him, but we're also so frail when we choose intentionally to disobey, right? When we choose not to obey the first time, that is direct disobedience. And so So, I mean, it was a blessing, you know, to be able to really see the depths of, like, my state or my corruption or my, you know, being in that and be able to, like, succeed and fail, like, in equal amounts. Like, I succeeded with him, yes, the rest of the week, but I also failed just as much as I succeeded with him. And so, I mean, it was really telling, and I mean, I'm grateful for the opportunity, and I'm grateful for just that awakened hunger and being able to see that contrast, you know. Yeah. I don't know if that made sense, but.
Thank you for sharing.
Are you taking him again?
Hey. That responsibility's been handed off, which, Sally, of course, does not mean that you are done carrying. Remember, Remy is a tool. So if Remy is not in your hands, that does not mean that you are not equally and fully and constantly responsible for that truth. That is a tool for us to learn, right? It's a reminder, a tangible reminder, which is something we're going to talk about tonight, how we have these tangible representations that help us stay loyal or stay faithful to. And Remy is just is one of those things. So don't feel relieved that Yvonne came and took it from Sally, right? Leave with the same mindset, even though it's not physically in your hands, okay? All right. Gabe, do you want to come read our portion? Thank you for sharing, Sally. All right, let's stand.
Then Moses said, "Eat that today, because today is a Shabbat to Adonai. Today you will not find it in the field. You are to gather it for 6 days, but the seventh day is the Shabbat, and there will be none." Yet on the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, and they found none. Adonai said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my mitzvah and my Torah? See, Adonai has given you the Shabbat, so on the sixth day he gives you the bread of 2 days. Let every man stay in his place, and let no man go out on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. The house of Israel named it manna. It was white like coriander seed and tasted like wafers made from honey. Then Moses said, "This is what Adonai has commanded. Let a full omer of it be kept throughout your generations, so that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out from the land of Egypt." Moses said to Aaron, "Take a jar and put a full omer of manna inside. Store it up before Adonai to be kept throughout your generations." Just as Adonai commanded Moses, Aaron stored it up in front of the testimony to be preserved. Bnei Israel ate the manna for 40 years. They ate the manna until they came to an inhabited land, when they came to the borders of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is the tenth of an ephah. All the congregation of Bnei Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin in stages according to the command of Adonai and camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. So the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test Adonai?" But the people thirsted for water there, and they complained against Moshe and said, "Why have you brought us out of Egypt to kill us with thirst, along with our children and cattle?" So Moses cried out to Adonai, saying, "What am I to do with these people? They're about ready to stone me." Adonai said to Moshe, "Walk before the people and take the elders of Israel with you, along with your staff with which you struck the river. Take it in your hand and go. Behold, I will stand before you there upon the rock of Horeb. You are to strike the rock, and the water will come out of it so that the people can drink. Then Moshe did just so in the eyes of the elders of Israel. The name of the place is called Massa and Meribah because of the quarreling of Ben Israel and because they tested Adonai, saying, "Is Adonai among us or not?" Then the Amalekites came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moshe said to Joshua, "Choose men, go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moshe said and fought the Amalekites. While Moshe, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. When Moshe held up his hand, Israel prevailed. But when he let down his hand, the Amalekites prevailed. Moshe's hands grew heavy, so they took a stone, put it under him, and he sat down. Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on each side. So his hands were steady until the sun went down. So Joshua overpowered the Amalekites and his army with the edge of the sword. Adonai said to Moshe, "Write this for a memorial in the book and rehearse it in the hearing of Joshua, for I will utterly blot out the memory of the Amalekites from heaven." Then Moshe built an altar and called the name of it Adonai Nisi. Then he said, "By the hand of the throne of Adonai, Adonai will have war with Amalek from generation to generation."
All right, you guys, while we get settled a little bit here and ready for our teaching, just a couple of things as far as kind of where we left off last week. I'm not going to recap all of last week because there was so much and there were so many different focuses, but a couple of things as far as big picture. One of the things we left with was that this was a portion last week where he began to give some instruction, right? So we learn about the partnership that we have with Yahweh and how our obedience is in direct response to his direction, but also when we don't obey those directions specifically or down to the detail, that we may not have access to that provision, right? So he gives some clear instructions. He also begins to lay out Shabbat and what that looks like, which is kind of what we move into right away in this portion. It's like a continuation of the story where they just cut it off. So we'll start there, but I want to make sure that just because I'm not going to cover necessarily Shabbat in detail, that's something that Mom taught on more so, that we remember that was just introduced. Also, that one important piece to just have continuously on your minds is that Yahweh is continuing to make himself known. So portion to portion, or from the beginning, literally the beginning, he is revealing himself to his people. He is making his character, he is making his the way that he is, not just who, but how. Yeah. When he says, "I am," well, what does that mean? What, who, how are you? And every time we dive in, yeah, he reveals another aspect of how he is. Yeah. Right? So yeah, we've seen him as deliverer, we've seen him as provider, and then we're going to move in this portion, we're going to see him also as a protector, right? So there is something that I want to make sure that while we grab a hold of all of the everything that Ruach is going to emphasize in this portion, there's so much that it's like you just, how Mom and Dad always say, what's highlighted is the layer that Yahweh is releasing over us in this season.
Yeah.
Right? That yeah, we could go in so many directions, but there is something that Yahweh wants to say and has been reading all of us as a household in this season. And the importance of recognizing that is because every season builds on what's next. So if we don't pay attention to what he has to say in this season, in this word, then the next time this word comes around, because we will be hearing from him and learning from him and being raised by him our whole lives, so we will read this literal portion many, many, many times in our lives.
Right.
And there will be something else that Yahweh highlights or speaks to, and it is building on what you receive right now.
Yeah.
So when it comes to matching, or that concept of matching in general in the spirit, it has everything to do with what he's establishing in you now so that he can continue to build on you in the future.
Yeah.
Okay? So along with that, what is so beautiful, I am conscious every time I use that word because I know I use it a lot, but it is absolutely beautiful, and I don't know what other word to use to describe it, is this grand expression of a father who continues to make himself known. That we are a people who he walked out of a place so that he could be fully revealed. So that's part of where that heart of gratitude, as we move into the word tonight, comes into play. That it will change the way you hear something if the way that you position yourself first is, I can't believe that you would make who you are, which is his truth and his instructions, that you would make who you are known to me. It will diffuse in you defensiveness,
yeah,
pride,
yeah,
arrogance,
right,
rebellion, those filters that are in us. They're not yours, they're your flesh.
Yeah.
And what you are is his being and his son and his daughter who long to hear,
yeah,
from him and long to have him reveal himself to you.
Right.
So connect with that part of who you are, because that is the reality of who you are,
yeah,
and allow everything else to simply be quiet.
That's good, Megan.
And not be quiet because it's going to rear up or roar itself up later, but to submit to the reality of who you are.
Right.
It's an exchange. It's a conscious exchange that you get to make and that you have the choice and the authority to make in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So we're going to partner with that in this moment, and we're going to get ready to receive.
That's good.
Okay.
That's good.
All right. So the subjects that we are going to tackle tonight are faith, obedience. You don't have to necessarily write these all down right now because we're going to get into them, but you can. Faith, obedience, remembrance, and accusation and testing. I'm going to follow the structure that Mom and Dad have laid out for us because I just think it's such a sweet way to like eat all of it, is by going line by line and just working our way through versus presenting those topics or the, like, you know, pulling things out and then releasing them, but going through and then being able to release from there. Okay? That's a new way of teaching for me. I've only done the portion one other time, and it was a long time ago. It feels like it was a long time ago. And it was different. So I'm practicing and I'm learning how to release from, like, literally I'm eating it and I'm releasing it in a moment. So bear with me, and thank you for your permission to be able to practice. Okay. So, like I said, he gave some instructions. And we heard right before we moved into this portion, they worked.
Yeah.
Right? Right before we move into this, we hear, so the ones they set aside until the morning, they didn't rot. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Then Moses said, eat that today, because today is a Shabbat to Adonai. Today you will not find it in the field. You are to gather it for 6 days, but the seventh day is the Shabbat, and there will be none. Yet on the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, and they found none. Were they told that they would find none?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, they went out to gather anyway, and what did they find?
None.
They found none. Okay, all right. Adonai said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my mitzvah and my Torah? Okay, pause. All right, so a couple of things in this section of the word that are significant for us now. I think it is remarkably humbling to have a picture or some insight. It's like we get this picture of Moshe's relationship with Adonai, where Moshe gives instructions. The instructions came from his mouth to the people, do not go out because there won't be anything to gather. There won't be anything to collect. They do. They find nothing. It does not say that Moshe does this. It does not say that he is one who goes out and looks for or tries to gather. It says some of the people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who does Adonai correct?
The leader.
Moses.
Okay. That is going to be a huge part of what we tackle tonight, is the vessel. All right? So you get this intimate viewpoint of the level of accountability. The level of accountability that is on Moshe as a vessel leading these people, when it is the people, some of the people, who disobey, who do not trust, who try to provide or care for, take things into their own hands, right? Who step outside of the covering of his instructions, and he goes to Moshe.
Yeah.
Okay. Another important takeaway from this part of the portion is the word people, but then you have him going to Moshe. So remember, as a family, what we've shifted out of and into, because we are inserted here, is we went from the individual, right? An individual to a people. They are moving as a people. This is another huge concept that we're going to tackle tonight. So the actions of some... The actions of some are representative of the people as a whole, because they are no longer seen as an individual, but a people. Okay? Because Yahweh does not bring a distinction and say, address it with some of these people, but he specifically says, how long will you refuse? He's not singling people out.
Yeah.
He is talking about his people that he's leading.
Yeah.
All while going specifically to Moshe, because he's the one leading them.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. We're going to continue. All right, so he gives some more directions. He explains himself further. Gives you the bread of 2 days. Let every man stay in his place. Mom tackled that last week about how we have to prepare doubly, right? If we're going to honor what he asks of us, it's part of readiness. It's part of, you can't govern anything if you're not prepared.
Yeah.
You can't own anything. You can't oversee anything.
Yeah.
If you don't do the work that it takes to be readied. Okay, and how that means more than just our personal preparation, but it's about the bride as a whole.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So he continues. The house of Israel named it manna. All right, I'm going to keep going. Moses said, this is what Adonai has commanded. Let a full omer of it be kept throughout your generations, so that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness when I brought you out from the land of Egypt. Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put a full omer of manna inside. Store it up before Adonai to be kept throughout your generations. Okay. Then they obey. They store it up in front of the testimony to be preserved. And they eat that manna for 40 years. And we move forward. But again, you have a tangible reminder. How often do we talk about remembrance? And how is it that we are so quick to forget?
Right.
So quick to forget. And we have so many means by which to remember.
Right.
Yahweh is extremely intentional, knowing our nature, knowing that we are quick in our flesh to forget, to not remain faithful, that he gives us tangible reminders. Okay, then for the next 40 years, you're going to look at it. You're going to see it. It's going to travel with you. That provision is going to continue to come. But still, here's a reminder for the generations and the generations after.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get into remembrance a little bit more further on. But just be in your spirit, partnering continuously with that heart of gratitude for all of the means by which he ensures you remember. It really removes the heart's position of blame that comes in when we say, faithful to what? Faithful to who?
Yeah.
Who are you to demand things of me?
Yeah. Come on.
When there is this, he shows us again and again when he reveals himself, this is how I am. This is the God that I am, that I was, that I always will be. We are the ones who choose to forget.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's abundant.
Yeah.
The means are abundant. All right. And this is a people who we've seen forget very, very quickly, right? There is no judgment because,
right?
In fact, it's the exact, I would think that it would stir up in us the reality of how hard we have to work or how intentional we have to be because we didn't literally we didn't literally see the C part.
Right.
We didn't literally, these aren't things that we experienced, and we have to remember all the same.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And they forgot.
Yeah.
Days after, we learned that a couple portions back. Okay. All right. All the congregation of Bnei Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin in stages, according to the command of Adonai, and camped in Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. All right, pause. Okay, the people moved in stages, according to his command. Can we personalize that? Have we moved in stages according to the command of the Lord? Yes. I want to hear us a little bit louder about that because he has absolutely moved this family in stages, moved his bride in stages, step by step, season by season. He has given names to each and every season that you have walked through.
Yes.
He has given warnings as you have entered those seasons again and again and again. He has led, he has directed, and he has given clear direction every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time he presented, this is what's for you, this is where I'm calling you to, this is what can get in your way, this is what can oppose you, and this is what you can do about it.
Yeah.
Every stage that we have been led. Okay. but there was no water. Okay, if Yahweh led, if he commanded, and he's the one who marked these stages, do you think that he was aware that there wasn't water?
Yeah.
Right? It's like everything else that Yahweh brings us to or leads us in, where he calls us to a place, we get to that place and we're like, do you know where you called me to? Right? Like that's the mindset or that's the attitude, because there's in the place that he calls us to, there is a press or it is uncomfortable or it is unknown territory, and we turn and we begin to question, accuse, all of the things that we're going to get into as well tonight.
Yeah.
When just a minute ago, we were saying, you lead the way. you know the stages that you are calling me to along that, like that bridge from where I am to where I'm being called. You know all the steps along the way. You are leading me. You know when it's time to stop. You know when it's time to pick up. You know when it's time to dwell here a little longer. You know when it's time to move through something quick, right? But regardless, when we get to that stage or that place where he calls, it's like immediately, because of what we're met with or what meets us there, there is a quarreling in us that begins to stir.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Okay. All right. So the people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test Adonai? All right. We're going to take some time here. So the language that is used when the people say, give us water to drink, to me, in my mind, that sounds accusational. It implies that there is something being withheld. If I were to say, can you find some water? That's different than saying, give us water. Give us water to drink. There is something being implied that is the beginning, what I see as the beginning of a questioning of Moshe's intentions and character. Because we're about to see it escalate. But it's subtle at first. That's important. Okay? Because the people are us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Obviously, when we are read by a portion, we are inserted in every which way.
Yeah.
There is something to be gained, and there is a part of us that is represented in it all.
Yeah.
We know that. So I can say, we are the people.
Yeah.
Right?
Right?
Okay, so we are the people, which means that we are the ones that are questioning an intention when we say, or are beginning subtly to question intention. You led me to a place. There's nothing here that I need to sustain me. So give us water. Okay. Now, before we get in more of the actual quarreling and the accusation, one of the things about quarreling, when he says, why do you quarrel with me? When I looked up quarrel to really try to understand in the Hebrew, what does it mean to quarrel? I always think of it as like bickering. Like it's just like a petty little, like bickering, you're fighting, you know. But quarreling is arguing in such a confrontational manner, according to the definition, It is arguing in such a confrontational manner that there is a threat for violence, for physical violence, which is why later we have Moshe say to Adonai, these people are about to stone me. We think he's being dramatic. I don't know if that's something that you could read from this is like, you know, when you talk to a friend or when you talk to Yahweh and you're like, seriously, like they're just, that is not what's happening here. There is a multitude, a mass of people. Think about what happens when you have a small group of people that are arguing and it's getting heated and it's getting confrontational and you can see body language start to like get kind of intense and everybody's starting to get heightened. That's like a small group of people, a mass of people. How quickly we've seen it. I mean, you see it on the news. You see it when there's how quickly that will spread and will escalate. Okay, so the reality when it comes to what he is expressing about why do you quarrel with me, that's the intensity that we're talking about. Okay, because if we don't understand that intensity, then we won't understand the connection between everything else that's going to happen, including how that quarreling with Moshe is likened to testing Adonai. Because there is not a distinction. He says, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test Adonai?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to decide if I want to get into testing or if I want to continue in accusation. All right, let's continue in accusation. I think we need a little more groundwork before the connection for testing Adonai comes. All right, so I'm going to keep reading, but don't forget that he just said, why do you test Adonai? All right. So the people thirsted for water there, and they complained against Moshe and said, why have you brought us up out of Egypt? To kill us with thirst, along with our children and our cattle? Have we heard this accusation before?
Yeah.
Yes, this literal accusation.
Yep.
The same three means of destruction. They said, kill us, like you've led us to die. You're killing us. You're going to kill our children. And you're going to kill our livelihood or our source of provision. That's the cattle. All of those were accusations prior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? So it's not just, do you know what you're doing?
Right. Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
I feel like you keep getting us lost. Or do you, I'm not feeling super confident in the way that you're leading. That is not the accusation. That is not the questioning. It is about his absolute character and his intentions and why they were delivered from a place and are moving through to where they're called.
Right.
It is. This accusation has been mirrored, literally mirrored amongst our family, livelihood, children, right? So there's something significant in that, and this is what it is. Those are the very things that there is a fullness of freedom that is coming to on the other side of deliverance.
Yeah.
It is on behalf of the next generation,
the
children.
Yeah.
It is because the truth is that your livelihood, your means of provision are all meant to be submitted fully to me. Yeah. I am your source of provision, not your slave master.
Right. Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm leading you to the destruction of the very thing that provides for you, your cattle, when Moshe is the one who said, in the midst of deliverance, we will not compromise. They will all be free. They will all go. He said, leave your children.
Come on,
right?
And Moshe said, no.
Yeah, you're right.
Come on.
He said, okay, I'll let you go. Leave your livestock.
Right.
Moshe said, absolutely not. They will not be yours. They will not be under you. They do not belong to you. They are mine.
Right?
But then Moshe is the one who is accused of then leading those very things to destruction. How quickly we forget. It's fascinating to me that that accusation never changes from the beginning to the middle to the that accusation is what is held onto, and the twisting, you can see the twisting that comes to forget what Moshe stood for from the beginning. Your children were free before. Do you remember the children that were being tossed in the river? You remember the firstborn Hebrew children that they said, you will not live. The boys that could not father. But then the accusation from his own people to challenge him and say, do you want our children to die? When death is the very thing that he stood in a place to deliver them from. And in the spirit, as we are inserted into this portion, remember, delivered only to die? Yes. Absolutely. So there's the other twisting that happens, right? Because Yahweh brings you from a place of deliverance into a wilderness that we learned is a wilderness of nothing, so that you can completely die to yourself, so that you can only serve and worship Him. So what really is it that you're fighting the death of? What really is it that you're accusing Him of then? Absolutely. It's that I don't want to die. And the reality is when we preserve or we protect in that way, what does happen to the next generation? What does happen to your livelihood? What does happen to your source of provision? If it's not from Him, it's not blessed. What does that mean? Okay. All right. Moving back into testing Adonai. Before we move on into how Adonai directs Moshe. Okay? All right. So there's accusation and there's questioning. There's accusation and there's questioning of the vessel of deliverance. There's a testing of Yahweh. What does it mean to test Him? Okay, I want to stop some thoughts right there. Testing is not the same as wrestling. Okay, do not say, well, yeah, I have every right to test Adonai. No, you don't. He wants you to wrestle, but testing does not mean the same thing. Okay? Well, but I'm supposed to seek understanding. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can ask a question to gain understanding, but to test Him? To test Him means that you are demanding, you a being he created, his creation, who wouldn't exist without his power and his authority and his lordship, you are demanding that he prove himself to you. That is what it means to test him. That he has to prove his faithfulness, that he has to prove his ability. And it's a justification for our doubt and our forgetfulness.
That was really good.
All right, three things when it comes to testing Adonai. To test him is to imply that your seat of authority is greater. And like I said before, when we accuse and we question, that is absolutely not the same as being willing to wrestle. Okay, but I want you to write that down. To test him is to imply your seat of authority is greater. Number two, to test him implies you set the standard by which he is evaluated. If I'm challenging him when he has led the way, when he has directed my steps in stages, and he has all along that way given me all of these means to remember how faithful he has been, and he is a God who is active and continues to literally prove himself, reveal himself. That's the issue, is that we demand proof when all that it is in his spectrum is revealing. It's Yahweh being God. It's the fullness of who he is, his character exposed or released over us. And because of our condition, we forget and then we demand that he prove himself again. Right? So to test him implies that you set the standard by which he's evaluated. Number three, to test him, again, that means to question or accuse, right? To demand that he prove himself. To test him means that you are back as God on the throne. If I'm in a seat of authority, if I'm the one by which the standard is set, then I am God.
Yeah.
That's what that means. All right, I'm just going to read a couple different portions of the word that point to this testing of Adonai. Okay, so Deuteronomy 6:16. You are not to test Adonai your God as you tested him at Massah. Or Massa. Okay. Then Yeshua references the same testing and uses the same verbiage, that you are not to test Adonai your God. And that's in Matthew. And it's Matthew 4, verses 5 through 7. And it's actually when Satan is testing Yeshua. And he says, again, it is written, you shall not put Adonai, your God, to the test. Yeshua refuses to prove himself in that moment. Don't test me. I don't have to prove who I am to you. Because that would be submitting to the authority of Satan. Right? Just like he does not need to submit his authority to you.
Right, yeah, right.
Okay. One of the progressive dangers in this issue of testing comes after they have walked through the wilderness of nothing so that they can serve, not themselves, not a false god, not a slave master, but that they can worship him, is that when there is testing after that work of the wilderness, again, think about where we are, after the work of the wilderness is done, it's a way to then reestablish ourselves. Right? So if he leads me through the wilderness where I am dying to myself so that I can learn how to only serve him, only worship him, allow for there to be no other place of residence or no other body of residence on the throne that he alone deserves and occupies. I walk through that journey and then I forget. And once again, I'm back on the throne because I'm demanding that he submit to my authority and prove himself to me. Be watchful. Be aware. There is a work that's being done in us in that time of the wilderness where we are delivered from a place and we are on that journey to where he has called us to, where he has said is our place to dwell and where he'll meet us, that when we're on that way, there is a temptation in the discomfort and in the press, which we've already said that one of our standards as a family is we normalize discomfort, right? But while we're growing in that, when the discomfort comes, what happens is we have a tendency to quickly forget, and then the work that's been done, it's like, well, I've been off the throne for, I don't know, 100 days, but now that I'm uncomfortable, or now that I am questioning, now that my doubt is starting to stir up in me, now that I am getting nervous or worried or unsure, or things don't look the way that I thought that they would, and so now I'm insecure, and now I'm scared, and I don't know what this is going to look like, and I don't know about this, then all of a sudden it's like, so where are you? Again, that transfer happens. I'm back on the seat. I'm demanding he prove himself, and I am usurping my authority over him. That's a lifestyle shift that we are growing in, to not have that like back and forth, right? So that there's not this like shift that happens in my own doubt or my own discomfort where it's like, I've vacated my seat long enough. But be real, does that happen?
Yeah, totally.
Where you're like, we don't even realize that it happens, but you'll find yourself back on the throne.
Yeah.
You'll find yourself back in that place of authority, being the one who, nope, you are not going to dictate these stages to me. Oh, I wanted to do one more thing. Psalm 95:8 also references testing Adonai coming from a hardened heart, which is, yes. It's Psalm 95, and I'm trying to find it for you. Okay. Do not harden your heart as Meribah, as in the day of, I don't know how to say this, Massa in the wilderness. When your fathers tested me, they challenged me, even though they had seen my work. There's more, but it talks about when it says, do not harden your heart as at Meribah, as in the day of Massa in the wilderness. So going back to portions that we've dove into before, where we have addressed a hardened heart, that there is a connection then, right, between everything we're talking about and your heart being hard. Okay, that comes with testing. When you are one who is characterized by a frequent testing, meaning asking him or needing him to prove to you over and over again, if that is something that you are characterized by, then a hardened heart might be at play, and go back to the blueprint of how did I get a hardened heart? How do I not have a hardened heart, right? We have all of those directions and answers have already been given. Okay. I forgot I wanted to add that one. All right. Before we move on, so we've covered the testing of Adonai for the most part. We also want to tackle the accusation and questioning of the vessel because both are happening at the same time, right? Moshe is the vessel. That's all he is. We've seen the progression of Moshe's life. He is a man.
Right.
He is a man who Yahweh said, hold on, get your house in order. Hold on, I know you have a heart for the people, but we don't commit murder. Hold on, like he's just a man. He's just a man. He's a vessel. Okay? He's the vessel that Yahweh used to deliver his people, which is an incredible thought, but he's a man nonetheless. It's Yahweh who brought them out of Egypt, right? But the accusation, the focus of the people is also on him. It's not just everyone walking around questioning Yahweh.
Right.
It's not everyone just walking around muttering about how, like, man, God is just unpredictable. And he is just like, it's
right.
He.
Right.
He is leading us to die.
Right.
He is going to cause our children to die. He is going to lead us into the destruction of our livelihood and our provision. It's him. Why is that so easy? Like, genuinely, why is it so easy to accuse men? And in particular, to accuse a vessel who leads. It is easy. And there's a reason why it's easy. It's easier to blame a vessel because they're tangible.
Yeah.
They're here, which is a really simple, dumb way to, like, I mean, that's a dumbed down, like, to just say, like, well, they're just here. But at some level, that's the reality. If he's just a man who is continuously meeting with Yahweh, who is giving him every single instruction, every single stage, none of that is of himself. None of that is just, I'm so wise.
Yeah.
He is led and chastised and held accountable every single step of the way. And the only thing that he had, the only thing we saw in the life of Moshe was that he had a heart for the people.
Yeah.
We literally saw his heart turn, we saw his heart break, and he didn't know what to do, but he knew he had to do something.
Yeah.
So he killed a man.
Right.
He took it into his own hands. And then once Yahweh knew he was a willing vessel,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all. He just said yes.
Yeah.
Once he knew he was a willing vessel, he began to lead him and transform him, and Moshe obeyed.
That's really good.
He's simply the vessel. But it is easier to blame a vessel as they're tangible, as they're visible. Blaming a vessel, the vessel of leadership, affords us some things. Okay? We've talked about this in certain contexts before. We've talked about, I think it was actually a teaching. Maybe, I think Derek and I did it. You remember blame?
Yeah.
So blame affords us a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. This is part of why it's so easy to accuse the vessel Why it's so easy to accuse who you're following.
Yeah.
Who they were following. It was easy for them.
Yeah.
Because it excuses yourself from having to follow it all.
Right.
Right? If my source of accusation is pointed towards the one I'm following, I'm done. I don't have to follow anymore. It wouldn't make sense to like blame this guy next to me. That's not gonna afford me anything. Right? Like you don't hear the word expressing, then the people were, you know, like blaming each other, and everybody was like, well, you did this and you did that and you did this and you.
Right.
It's all Moshe. Why? Because if they blame the one who leads, that is their excuse to no longer have to follow.
Yeah.
Which is interesting also, because while the people accuse or complain about who's leading, the struggle in the people is literally just to follow.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Like the accountability, the chastisement, the constant directives and connection points, those aren't being demanded of the people. They're being demanded of Moshe. But the people are having such a hard time simply just following, not leading, which is a whole other level of accountability and a whole other level. Talk about uncomfortable. Talk about the level of demand and responsibility, right? But still, we can't follow without forgetting or doubting or testing or wanting to stone someone. But there's all this accusation towards Moshe. It's just interesting. Again, it points back to because it affords us something, right? One of the other things that happens here is you can tell that Moshe is feeling a separation between him and the people, which, again, he is just a man and he is the people. He is walking through the same process, the same journey. He is being led from deliverance through the wilderness to where Yahweh is calling him.
Right.
But he has the burden, the responsibility, the great honor, but also the burden. It literally makes me nauseous because I buckle at the responsibility of bringing a word. So I can't imagine the responsibility of leading a people to the extent of their deliverance into all that Yahweh has said has been theirs from the beginning of time, which is really what we're doing. But regardless, in the natural, that dependency, that faith, that's a hard road. That's a hard road.
Yeah.
And he begins to see or to feel this separation because he's at least when I hear his language, he's saying like the people versus me. Because he's talking about, what am I to do for these people? They are about ready to stone me. So there's the people and there's me. He is the people, but they're using Moshe to excuse themselves from the discomfort and their doubt and their lack of faith and their forgetfulness of who Yahweh is and has been to them, and then puts it on Moshe and they begin to separate themselves.
Yeah.
His people.
Right.
When, I'm going to go back to this part. When it's his heart for the people that positioned him in the first place. That is the only reason that Moshe is leading his people. That's it. His heart turned for his people, and he was willing to be a vessel and walk in obedience, get his house in order, and follow.
That's good.
Okay. But Yahweh is about to set some things in order. And just like he always does in his faithfulness, he is going to extend another opportunity. Okay. So we're going to move on. All right. So Moses cries out to Adonai and he asks, what do I do? Adonai said to Moses, walk before the people and take of the elders of Israel with you, along with your staff with which you struck the river. Take it in your hand and go. Behold, I will stand before you there upon the rock in Horeb. You are to strike the rock and water will come out of it so that the people can drink. Then Moses did just so in the eyes of the elders of Israel. All right. So he cries out. He asks to be positioned. What do I do? How do I stop? Again, it's his heart for the people. I don't see Moshe here preserving himself or it being about, I just don't want to get stoned. But he's asking on behalf of, what am I to do for these people? Because we're in such a place of quarreling, we're in such a place of accusation that they are about to end my life. What do I do for them? And Yahweh responds and he gives direction. And this direction, how I see this, is him reestablishing the order that's being questioned. It's reestablishing the order, the authority that's being challenged. He tells Moshe to pass through the people with his staff. This is the staff, right? This is the staff that led them in the crossing over. Okay? So he has this reminder. So first of all, I'm scared. I'm scared for Moshe. When I'm reading this in this moment, I'm like, I would be scared to even walk. You're walking through the people that are quarreling about you, that are confronting you, that are accusing you, and are about ready to take upon themselves acts of physical violence. And I need you to pass through them. Okay? So he passes through them, and as he does, he's holding his staff, the staff that has led them to this place of deliverance. He's got his elders with him. This is the first time we hear about that. With his elders. This is a picture of Yahweh's authority on earth through his vessel. That's what's happening, okay? The people are challenging that authority, right? They're questioning it, and Yahweh is reestablishing it on earth. It's visible. He's not doing this in private. He's not doing this in secret. He's not like, he doesn't have Moshe in this little huddle where he's telling him, okay, so this is what you're going to do. This is how we're going to defuse the situation, okay? He says, pass through the people. Walk through all of them. With the staff that I gave you that yields my power and my authority. And then you have the picture of the ones who are directly under his authority.
Yeah.
His elders. Right? He doesn't tell Moshe to go by himself. This isn't about him. It's about Yahweh's authority and who he says is in authority over the people that he asks to be led out of a place to a place.
That's good.
Right.
Okay, then the picture I have is then this vessel is standing there, and Yahweh says, and I will stand before you. Hmm. Authority? Authority on earth? Under authority? Under authority as a people. That's the picture. Okay. Then the way that he provides, the way that he responds is remarkable as well, because first of all, he's already said he's being tested, right? They're forgetting. He could say, you've had enough reminders. I have been faithful. I have shown you that I am who I say that I am.
Yeah.
But he uses this opportunity not just to provide for the people in the form of water, but he also knows that that authority is their provision as well. So he has this. He has a specific structure to how he's going to perform this miracle of provision. And the structure itself is what we're focusing on tonight. I'm not diving into why a rock, those kinds of things. Mom's already spoken to that about the, you know, the rock and the tree and all of those different things, that all of the different means that Yahweh uses and what they represent, right? And how they're prophetic declarations and all of that. So I'm not gonna get into that. But what I do want to emphasize about the rock is that it continues to provide this visual confirmation of his power and his authority. Right? To take something that is needed and reveal it or provide it in a way that is not, there's no capability of man to do. Right? So again, this is confirmation of what's been in question. His character, his provision, who he is, how he is, his faithfulness and his ability, which is the definition of testing. Demanding that he prove his faithfulness and his ability. Which is why that place is called a place of testing and a place of strife. That's how that part of the portion ends. The name of the place was called Massah and Meribah because of the quarreling of Bnei Israel and because they tested Adonai, saying, is he among us or not? Okay, then there's a war. Okay. After all of that, the next thing we hear, and it goes immediately into the war. So we have the description or the definition of the name of the place. And it says, then the Amalekites came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. So we know they're still in the same place, right? Rephidim, that is where they were led, the place that Yahweh in stages brought them to. They're still there. I don't know how much time has passed. I don't know that, but they're still there. And the Amalekites come. One of the questions that I am pondering, am just kind of asking Yahweh about, is the connection. Obviously, it's not random. Because Yahweh is sovereign. So we are growing in our understanding of who and how he is as sovereign and how we are to be as partners, right? That there's both, okay? But in his sovereignty, his people that he led in stages to a place are in that place when they are attacked. That wasn't a surprise to him. That wasn't outside of his knowledge or his awareness or his foresight or his omnipotence. It's not random. What exactly was the cause of the war? I don't know, other than we know who the Amalekites are. We know that lineage. We know where it comes from. So we can make those connections, right? Of there is some talk about an enemy of the Lord, right? An enemy to the people of a birthright, of sonship, of heritage, right? We can make those connections, but we also can't dismiss the connection between everything that just happened in this place that he led them, and then there's a war. Okay? Okay. So, I'm going to read, about the war, and then I'm just going to release on it. Okay. Then the Amalekites came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moshe said to Joshua, "Choose men, go out, and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses said and fought the Amalekites, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. When Moshe held up his hand, Israel prevailed. But when he let down his hand, the Amalekites prevailed. Moshe's hands grew heavy. So they took a stone, put it under him, and he sat down. Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on each side. So his hands were steady until the sun went down. So Joshua overpowered the Amalekites and his army with the edge of the sword. Adonai said to Moshe, "Write this for a memorial in the book and rehearse it in the hearing of Joshua. For I will utterly blot out the memory of the Amalekites from under heaven." Then Moshe built an altar and called the name of it Adonai Nisi. All right. So, regardless of the origination or the ultimate cause, was something attracted? I mean, I'm just putting stuff out there because of everything that just happened, right? Was something attracted in the sense of there's testing? There's testing of Adonai? And there is division among the people? There's quarreling, right? There's accusation and there's questioning, and then an enemy of the Lord comes. Okay? Regardless, they come. And again, there is direction. The direction is what I want to focus on. Okay? On top of the fact that we have another example of his sovereignty and our partnership.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you see Moshe, Joshua, Aaron, Hur, and everyone who's fighting, everyone who's engaging in the battle that Joshua is leading. Yeah. How many roles are there to play? Right? All of a sudden, the people who are quarreling are having to be directed in how to stay alive. So that they can even see that land that they've been delivered unto. Right? They're not there yet. And they're being they're being attacked. Their lives are being threatened. This is a war.
Yeah.
So you see Moshe beginning to direct. He directs Joshua on the ground. And then he says, I'm going to go up on that hill and keep the staff of God in my hand. Okay, so Moshe is being positioned differently than he ever has been before. He's been amongst the people, walking with the people, leading them, but amongst them. And now he gives direction to those who are on the ground, and he says, I'm going to be at the top of this hill. Yeah. There is a shift in oversight. There is a shift in how he is positioned to use his authority. He has a role on that hill. While Joshua and his army have a role on the ground. And without each of them in their place, and then we have Aaron and Hur that come, and Moshe physically can't keep his arm up any longer, and they realize, okay, just because there's a battle being waged down here, if I stop doing what I'm doing, they will still die. If Joshua were to disobey and say, no, I'm not doing that, then there's literally no one to fight the war.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So all of this movement is happening, and they're all pictures, again, of our partnership. It's his sovereignty, our partnership, but also the authority that just came, the order that was just established, and it's activated in a time of war. Another powerful thing about Moshe's positioning being at a higher place of elevation is in my mind, I'm seeing that also as a like another tangible reminder or another means of remembrance. Because when you're on the ground and you are wielding a sword, that's all you see.
Right?
So it would be easy for those who are on the ground to say, we won this battle.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But what we know is that when Moshe stepped out of his place,
yes,
they began to lose.
Right. Well,
yeah. And he is not hidden. Again, he is not hidden. He is not in a secret prayer room. He is not in a tucked away place with Yahweh, where Yahweh is saying, okay, now do this and now do this. He is on top of a hill overlooking the battle.
Yeah.
And the way that Yahweh asks him in his obedience to position himself in the midst of this, that is shifting the direction of what's happening on the ground, is affecting things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that place, people have to see. There has to be some level of like, I mean, I know when you're on the ground, you're seeing, but I just mean he's not tucked away.
Right.
He's visible. He's on top of a hill. Right?
Yeah.
That means something. It could be this another tangible sign or visual confirmation that it's Yahweh who protects.
Yeah.
right? This is keeping the people in check. Again, I won that battle.
Yeah.
No, because when Moshe put his hand down, you started to lose.
Right.
And Moshe putting his hand up literally doesn't win a battle. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It has no direct impact on what's happening on the ground.
Yeah.
Just like his staff doesn't physically, literally move water.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is Yahweh's way to require partnership from you.
Yeah. That's good, man.
And it is a way that he reminds you that you are not the one who can defeat an army. It is not you who is the one that provides or that protects. It is me. But it requires your partnership. It required Moshe's partnership. It required Aaron and Hur's partnership. And it required Joshua and his army. Something else about Moshe being up on this hill and Aaron and Hur beside him. It's not just a picture. So if it's providing a picture, if it's not hidden, if it's not tucked away, it is presenting who and how Yahweh is and who he's entrusting with his authority and with his power, right? Which is something that he also just did when they were demanding water, which is why he asked them to lead or to go in the way that he did through the people. Him and his elders, right? There was purpose in that. So just like that, there is purpose in this where you have Moshe and you have Aaron and Hur, and they are in a visible place.
Yeah.
It is not just to remind the people of who it is that's protecting them, of who it is that's winning the battle, right? It's Yahweh. It is not just for them, but it is being made known to their enemy. So when Yahweh sets things in order and he wants these things to be known, it's not just for the sake of the people, but he's also going to make some things known to the enemy, to the enemy of his people. That authority, that order, because he is a God of authority and of order, and he demands that same authority and that same order on earth. When we talk about this, when we talk about this enemy, I know that it's, I feel like we're still in this place where we moved out of blaming everything on the enemy, right? And learning how to take responsibility for ourselves, but also not paying attention or giving attention, unnecessary attention, and calling it forward and focusing on who he is, right? And at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that there are those who oppose him.
Yeah.
And don't just oppose him in that they're indifferent.
Yeah. Right.
But who hate, who despise what is his. And that wants all that he possesses. What's important about that is that that will help us remember who the enemy is. Tying everything together, that he was accused, questioned, Moshe was, by his people.
Right.
And then a people who despise Yahweh and despise his people come to not just, this isn't a confrontation, but to kill them, to massacre them as a people.
Right.
It wakes you up really quick as to who the enemy is.
Right.
It was like, were we just quarreling? Were we just about to physically harm, like, our own people? When all of a sudden, there has to be instruction and there has to be partnership so that we can turn our attention to the actual enemy of his people in order to defeat them together.
Right.
Because we learned there can't be a victory in and of ourselves.
Right.
There can't be a victory without order and without authority. So we have to remember that there is an enemy who hates what is his, and that is us.
Yeah.
Remembering who the enemy really is when a spirit of accusation or when a spirit of questioning or when a spirit of testing comes in. But who's the one? That goes back to distorting the past. That goes back to justifying everything that we learned in that Torah portion, right? Where we will distort things to excuse ourselves or justify ourselves, and then we start to trick ourselves as to who's for me? Who's against me?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
That's good.
That's part of that forgetfulness.
Yeah.
Right? And so then it's like the ultimate goal of that enemy is successful and he doesn't have to do a thing.
Right.
Because we destroy our own people ourselves.
Right.
And it's only when we're reminded that we are a people, when we're under attack as a people, that we're like, oh, we are supposed to move together.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But will we forget again?
Right.
That is our point of responsibility and accountability in our growth and in our maturity. Don't allow yourself to forget. Don't allow yourself to step into a place of partnering with confusion and accusation and questioning and testing.
Yeah.
What does he do to ensure that that doesn't happen? Write this down. There are many reasons why I believe he says, write this down. But again, write this down and build an altar. It is a reminder. It's a reminder. What is it a reminder of? What's he asking them to remember? Absolutely, who and how he is. That was a place where he made himself known again, where he revealed another part of what it means to be I am. That he's faithful, even in the midst of their testing and of their accusation, that he is faithful.
Right.
In their faithlessness. Just as he's been a deliverer, just as he's been a provider, he's been a protector. It's also a reminder to the people and to others, just like we talked about the hill, it makes who he is known to future enemies. But I also wonder if part of what the Spirit of the Lord is speaking over our house is to remember who the enemy is. If that writing this down is also a means to convey to them, remember who you are as mine and that you are a people. When the temptation to quarrel or accuse or question and test comes again. Write this down. Remember. Remind yourself. Allow me to remind you before you pick up a stone.
Yes. Yeah.
Before you pick up a stone and you do the work of the Amalekites, and they don't even have to come.
Right.
Remember. Write this down. To stay loyal to is so hard when we forget.
Yes.
That sounds so obvious. But it can't be because we struggle. Meaning as a people, I'm not just saying in this room we struggle, although that is true. We struggle as a people to stay loyal to. It is hard when we continuously forget. When forgetting just means doubting, questioning. We question how he is. If you question how he is, it's really hard to stay in a place of loyalty.
Yeah.
You will waver and you will waver and you will waver. And it's not even about who you're following. It's about the fact that you don't really know how he is. Staying loyal to does not just have to do with Yahweh. If what we're learning, if what we're gaining and being inserted to here is that it's about the vessel and the people, and it's about not testing Yahweh, then remembering, that's what I mean about what else could it mean when he says, write this down so you don't forget. That staying loyal to is also about staying loyal to one another. It's about staying loyal to the vessel that you said you would follow because you are submitted to his authority.
Right.
And he said, Moshe was willing, so it's him.
Yes.
He keeps saying yes. He keeps doing the work. He keeps getting things in order.
Right.
He lets me chastise him. He lets me hold him accountable.
Right. Yeah.
So it's him. But when they forget, it's not just about testing Adonai. It's about struggling to stay loyal to who they're following and loyal to one another as a people.
Right.
Because there's no distinction there. Moshe is the people. The word that I hear for our family moving forward from this portion is Yahweh has given us so many means to ensure that we stay faithful, knowing our nature, and he will continue to do so. So that later, when we forget, or eventually, obviously, eventually the heart that I know we can acquire as a family is that we will be a people who remember. That is part of our responsibility as transitionaries. If we forget, there's no foundation set for who's next. There are so many means to ensure we stay faithful. Everything I talked about before. Warnings, directions, accountability, partnership. Literally, you can talk to anyone in here about anything in your life. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
You could talk to anyone in here about the darkest, hardest, nastiest things in your life. But then we forget. And the word, I'm kind of like feeling all kinds of different things, but I'm getting to the word. But the word is that if we do not grow to a place where we can't stay loyal. Hear me when I say that. Remember here. How are we going to be prepared for when the actual enemy of the Lord comes and it is our responsibility to defeat him as the bride? All that means is that the more we allow ourselves to justify, to excuse, to, because that's all, I don't want us to be scared. When we talk about blame, all it is your flesh that we are learning how to let fully lay down and die. It is your flesh not wanting responsibility. Right? That's what it is. So when we accuse, it's because we need a means to justify our lack of responsibility.
Yeah. That's good.
Right? It is no different than the loophole warning that came. When that loophole warning came, I don't even remember how long ago that was. It feels like forever ago, but it couldn't have been. 2 years? One? Something like that?
That was 2 years ago.
I don't know.
I feel like it was like five.
But it's no different. The loophole warning was simply, if there is anything in you that does not want to own the responsibility that he's calling you to as a transitionary bride, you will find a way out.
Right.
That warning was given before any form of instruction came.
Yep. Yeah.
At all. It was like the greatest lie was exposed, and Yahweh came in his faithfulness and said, okay,
yep.
I know I'm blowing everything up in your life.
Yep.
I know that this truth is the most confrontational truth that you will hear in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Yes. I know that. So let me safeguard you from yourself.
Yeah.
And let me warn you of what your flesh is prone to. Because I know that that's not who you are, because you're mine. So be aware. That's all I'm saying now. But you're being aware specifically of things like what we're hearing here, because we're inserted into this. Be aware of questioning. Be aware of accusation. It is not excusable in the sense that it is not the same as seeking to understand. Right. It is not the same as wrestling until you do.
Uh-huh. Right.
Until you do understand. It is not the same.
Right.
We understand what it means to test, and we understand what it means to accuse. And as long as that is going on, then we are distracted and we are unprepared. I mean, thank God, you see this, you see that shift quickly, and there is a victory,
mm-hmm.
right? You see that movement, but that is what we can gain from this. That's what's so incredible about us being inserted and having ancestors who teach us and show us what to be aware of and how to position ourselves.
Yeah.
Let's not walk the same way or the same manner, because what we do know is there is forgetfulness that comes or that continues up to the degree of forgetfulness where there are some who will refuse to enter the promised land. Right? Out of fear, there are different reasons, but there are some who will refuse and there are some who will be denied. Doesn't have to be so. That's part of why he inserts us here. So that we have even more, and we have even more because we have this, and we have access, and we have our Messiah. I think I'm done.
That's good, Megan.
Well, thank you, Megan, for that. It's always humbling. when he puts things in perspective.
Okay. When she was talking about the Omer at the beginning, when they like took the manna. Thank you, Lord. I forget that word. When they took the manna and they like separated it. It was interesting to me, and it stood out that he said to like put it in a jar and put it somewhere where people can remember. Because I was thinking, it like how easy if we are ones that can be quick to forget, or ones that can distort the past, mm-hmm. or ones that can so quickly like take something that was a gift and twist it into something that isn't anymore. How intentional he was to say to put it in a jar, in the sense of like, I don't want it touched, I don't want it to be manipulated, I don't want it to be forgotten, I want it to be something that the generations can remember. So like, take it and safeguard it and put it in a place of remembrance. And so I'm just thinking, even practically, like that was their provision, that was what sustained them. And so taking that and just thinking of like the things that he's given us, and he's saying like how many times has he provided in a way that has seemed miraculous or like out of nowhere, and we can so quickly forget or distort and then get to a place of accusation and questioning and testing and getting to a place of like, well, where are you now? And how quickly we can distort where he has said, like, I'm bringing you out from under, and I'm getting you to a place where your flesh is fully dead so that I can give you all that I am and all that I have. And we can forget like that process and not have like that tangible thing to remember his provision. And so it might be something as easy as like going back and trying to be intentional even over your Shabbat and thinking through like, what were those times that I'm forgetting where you showed up, mm-hmm. when I literally had nothing else, where you pulled something out of thin air, or you made something miraculously pop out of the ground that I can't explain by anything else other than to say, like, you pulled me through that. You showed me, you gave, you extended, even in my lack of faithfulness. So to even just take our Shabbat to remember, like, what were those things that he's instilled or that he's given us that we can forget what they were. And to like, I don't know if we need to make our own like memorial or like of something, like if you need to tangibly get a jar and put your rock in it or put like something in it so that you have that reminder of what it looks like to continually remember that. But also to remember like that is what, like he's not changing.
Mm-hmm.
So don't test it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget in our place of inconsistency. So don't push it now.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're just kind of getting ready to close the evening, I want us to, like, as we're being intentional with our sowing and our time of like really just sowing into what was released, that we're being intentional to remember, like as you're writing those checks or as you're texting out that text to give number or pulling out that cash or whatever it is, that we're remembering, like, how did we get here? How did we get to this spot? Do I remember what he called me to get here? Do I remember the bigger vision? Do I remember what he's saying? Do I remember what's to come? Or have I forgotten and I've distorted it? And then when we're ready, we can take communion.
All right, you guys. Okay, so as we prepare to take communion, one of the things that I keep thinking through is, while we're talking about remembrance and all of the means that Yahweh has used for us to remember who he is, that this is an expression of just that, that we get to have an exchange or a trade in this moment when we move into Shabbat, to remind us to stay loyal to the one who has done it all, who has been faithful from the beginning. And not just do we get to engage that, but we also then get to say that as I do, and because you did, I can, and this portion is now written on my heart, and you can trust that that is done, and what you have to do as a partner in response is to simply walk out what's already been established on your behalf. So as you take your elements tonight, and as you speak before you do, and take your time when you say, it has been established, and this Torah portion is written on my heart, that this is not just a means of remembrance in that it's a tradition or an act, but it is a literal exchange with the degree of faithfulness that he embodies as Yahweh, who then became flesh for us, for you, so that you could go back to the Father in your original state and dwell and reside with him there. That is what it's on behalf of, and that is the call when we say it is established. And that also is then the action when we say this has been written on my heart. It is not a moment to agree with what's been done, but it is a promise to move forward from this place.
Yeah.
From this as a place.
Right.
As a memorial. As a reminder. As it is written and became flesh. Okay. So when you're ready.
All right, everyone. Thank you, Megan, for bringing that word. And ultimately saying yes in your own obedience to share what you shared, knowing that being a vessel yourself who is submitted to and under authority to bring a word that furthers that, like, it's not an easy thing to do, and it's not an easy light position to carry. And so I can personally say, and I know that the family would agree, that we are thankful and grateful for that elder sister in the picture represented here, and an elder brother who sent you into releasing that kind of a word. Can everybody kind of see, like, the picture of expansion in the Torah portion? How there's differing levels of authority, but what we saw and what was emphasized was that there's degrees of being a willing vessel and a commitment and a continual position and posture of obedience and action that gets put to that obedience that causes those things to happen. And can we also see the picture in our family tonight in expansion, that there's a seat of authority? Like, it's funny to say Moshe was in a high place, and then there's this, like, high place that the mother and father of our home are dwelling in and swirling in. And then there's what I'm reminded of is, years ago we had a teaching about a Joshua generation, and I see that there's, like, a Joshua generation here. Something that was said tonight that stuck out, like, it's said all the time, but it stuck out and kind of hit in a different way, was when you said that he is a God of order and authority. That just hit different tonight than it had previously when it was said. And something that came to me when I was hearing that and when I was pondering that was that we, as individuals, ones who will struggle with testing and quarreling and complaining and grumbling and moaning, all these things, that we want authority, but we miss that authority comes through willingness and obedience.
Yeah. Yep.
And that it comes from that posture and that position over and over and over and over. And yet we will also be prone to stand in a place, just like it was said tonight, to blame and accuse and quarrel against the one with authority who did the thing that we want and miss what it took to get there.
Yeah.
Right? I, with a word like tonight, I don't want to end and close tonight on like a bummer note, right? But at the same time, I want to just bring an emphasis on the weight of what was released tonight and the picture of expansion that we have in front of us. Because I heard tons of warnings in tonight. And I also heard a deeper call to wrestle those gut-level beliefs. Going back to that word that was released about figuring out what those gut-level beliefs are and how they're framing and shaping the way that we're operating now.
Yeah.
But there is a deep, deep call to continue to go back to that tonight.
Yeah. That's good.
And if we could leave here knowing that there's a deep thing that he's wanting to have wrestled out of us, and I can hear him saying, you better wrestle that. And of course, the constant reminder of be grateful. Because as hard as this can be, as intense as this can be, all of those things, how amazing is it that it's like he like plucked people out of a system. And when I say system, I'm talking about like even the world.
Yeah.
And it's like there's this little spotlight. Hear me when I say little. It's not little as in insignificant, but it's like pinpointed. And at the same time, it's so pinpointed in all of the things that he's wanting to deal with in that place, right? And I always say this, and I hope it doesn't sound old, but in all of this, there's a workout analogy that came to my mind. So I hope this doesn't sound like it's getting too old. There's moments when you're training and when you're being like pushed really hard, especially if there's a coach involved and somebody else is like directing and pushing you. There's moments where you hate what's happening in that moment. You're like, just get me out of this. But then days, weeks, months, whatever it is later, that physical ability you have is being put to the test. It's like it opens up a new perspective for you to look back on that moment and go, oh man, I'm grateful that I did go through that hard thing. Right? Because that hard thing produced a result that allowed you to pass a test in the future.
Yeah,
right?
That's good.
We can hear that?
Yeah.
The deeper thing that I feel he's getting at is, can you flip it? And in that moment of the hard testing, where you at one point would have a mindset of this sucks, get me out of this, can you flip it and be thankful for that?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Now that's an easy thing to say and a hard thing to do, because it is in a moment.
Yeah.
If I'm burning out and reaching muscle failure, I don't want to be thankful for that. Just like when we're being tested and we're in those intense moments, he's wanting that deep thing in us to flip, to turn into gratefulness in that moment.
Yeah.
Not that we'd look back on it and go, okay, I guess I was grateful for that. There's a deep thing that he's calling out tonight. Another warning or thing that I heard tonight was that added emphasis on loyalty. And what I heard him say is we can be loyal complainers. Who stick around but aren't fully invested.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll stay, but we're still going to kind of hold on to something. And then, of course, there's the picture of at the end when we were looking at the battle and the war that was taking place. a thing that I could feel Yahweh emphasizing in that. Of course, Megan hit on a couple different dynamics in it where the people could have claimed, like with Moshe at a high place and his direction and Yahweh's picture of authority in that, that without that, the people could have claimed the victory for themselves, yeah. Right? People could have taken credit for certain things, but that was removed from that situation because of the picture of authority, right? A thing that I heard in that was, can even in that picture, to take it a step further into an even deeper place in us, that we wouldn't then eventually turn back and accuse. Like, imagine if the people at the end of that or sometime later turned back and accused Moshe, well, you weren't actually in the battle. Mm-hmm. You weren't actually on the ground fighting. I was.
Yep.
Right? Like, can you hear that heart's position as well? That eventually it would decay, it would deteriorate, it would rot inside you, and you could take a thing that was Yahweh's picture of authority and order, and then from that place of forgetfulness, still allow it to turn into that thing where you say, well, you weren't actually there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was in the battle. I was sweating and grinding it out, and you were up there.
Yep. Yeah.
Meanwhile, he was put up there for a very specific reason so you could win that battle.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
There's like, I see so many different like flips and so many deep things in this. And so I want us to just walk away looking for those really deep things in us. And in that place to really flip what it means to be grateful. So walking away from here with that deep level of gratitude that you can be grateful even in those moments where it's hard. And recognizing that this is a picture of expansion that we have in front of us. And that this is a beautiful, orchestrated, ordained thing that he's doing. So wrestle it out and keep moving forward in it.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomairsflag.org. Thank you.
Good night,
Kingdom Heirs.
Hope this didn't oppress you, but press you.